Welcome to Brands Talking Influencers Q&A. We're taking our fireside chat to the Grin Getzrel podcast. Now you can listen and learn beyond the webinar experience. Los Angeles Apparel is on a mission to bring back apparel made in the USA by highly trained employees earning fair wages and supporting domestic farmers. They leverage creators as part of their marketing strategy to help share their brand story and drive awareness. They've had continued success with micro and macro influencers with a product seeding program strategy meant to drive brand awareness while also enjoying sales along the way. In our live conversation, what we explored was how to handle a creator that asks for payment in a product seeding program, the ideal workflow to save you time working with creators, finding the right creator for your influencer program, and identifying the success using creators as a strategy. And as always, during our live events, we have a live Q&A portion. Unfortunately, there's never enough time to get through them all. So that's why we bring them here. We're getting those unanswered questions answered on this Grin Gets Real podcast. So put your AirPods in, turn up that volume, and get ready for those unanswered questions with Elton and Anisha from Los Angeles Apparel. All right, Anisha and Elton, welcome back. This is the Grin Gets Real podcast moment, an extension of the Brands Talking Influencer Unanswered Questions. You guys ready to get started?
Yes.
Yep, I'm ready.
Excellent. All right, Anisha, I feel like this one is more for you. How is your onboarding process like after they accept the gifted collab?
Okay, so after they say yes to product gifting, I have templates set up. So I send them an expectations email. That's how I have it named in my templates. It's an expectation email that says, great, so glad to be working with you. Here is the link to make your selects. Let me know if you have any questions. And I tell them that we use a platform called Grin because it keeps all of your tag content and all of that stuff in one place for us. Make your selects here. Let me know if you have any questions. That's it. Then I get their proposal. Sometimes I may get a question like, oh, it says you'll own my content or something like that. And you get those like, you know, like girls. And it's like, you know, if you're uncomfortable, no worries. And then some girls may say like, oh, well, can we take this part out of the contract? And talking to our Grin contact, April, she was saying that when we move from campaigns to activations, we will be able to go in and individually set the contract specifications for those girls at that time. But now we can't do it. And then that's it. And then they send me their proposal. I click three buttons and that's it. I wait for the content. It's a very streamlined process, very streamlined.
Now, do you have an email sequence for, I don't know, do you send reminders out in regards to just kind of content and like checking in or anything to that sort once they've already accepted?
So once they accept the proposal, the email that they get is from Shopify in LA Apparel, okay. Los Angeles Apparel. It's like, hey, we got your order. It's on your way to you. And that's, I know when they get that, they're like, oh my goodness. It's just like, wow, it's quick. It's that. And then the last email they get from me is the affiliate link email. Like, hey, here's your unique link to share with your followers. And then some of them reply back like, thank you so much. Can't wait. And then I wait for their content. Because it's not a paid contractual, you know, binding contract type thing. I don't bug them like that. You're like, hey, did you post? You know, I think that helps with the relationship too. And then there's some girls who I don't even have to bug. They'll come back and say, I was so sick. I was traveling, but I'm back now. I'm moving, but I moved in now. I'll post in a week. You know, so I think that speaks volumes to the relationship already built off of three emails. You know, they're letting me know, hey, I got it and I'm going to post ASAP.
The thing that I would add to that is it's very little follow-up really necessary for us. I'd say 95% of the time it isn't. But what I would add is Grin makes it deadly easy for us to look at who has complied and who hasn't within a certain time frame. Because that content is uploaded and it's synced to their account, we can really quickly say, like, out of these 100 influencers who we've gifted, who hasn't created content yet? And when was their package shipped? And we can kind of measure from that of, oh, well, what percentage are out of the time frame that we would expect them? Let's say, just for argument's sake, it's 10 days after they've received their package. And then if it's necessary to follow up, Grin makes it really easy. Yeah. It's right there. It's like our CRM. It's just boom, email, done. right? But it's so very little of that because Anisha works so hard up front getting the right influencers that we've been kind of lucky on the back end. I wouldn't really say it's luck though, really earned that. But it is very small portion that we really have to worry about a lot of follow-up. The thing that we kind of, to elaborate on our previous chat, is we have a high-touch shipping process at Los Angeles Apparel. So not only do they get a confirmation that the order's been inputted, they're literally like within 2 hours, usually getting a shipping confirmation. And then within 5 days, sometimes it depends where you are in the country, but you know, on average, 2 days later, they're getting a delivery confirmation. So that really helps on the follow-up touch points.
Perfect. Now, which program or platform do you use to keep track of commission?
Yeah, it's Grin. I mean, that's one of the things that we looked at when we were evaluating platforms, was which platforms could really handle that in the platform. Some can't. So that was a big win for us. And it makes it really easy for us to experiment and test on different affiliate commission rates.
Next question. When do you think it's worth paying an influencer for posting, even if you only intended to do free product initially?
I think when it comes to Los Angeles Apparel, I would say, because a lot of girls ask for money up front and you have no idea what they can do. They can show you all these numbers and it can be fluff, you know, but when they have proven that they can move numbers for the brand.
Yeah.
It's like, and if we were going to do it again, and if they ask for something, absolutely, they've earned that. We can literally see analytically what they can do for us. So that would be how I would approach someone wanting payment. But Elton, you know, analytically might have another answer.
Well, no, what's great about that is that's really our default view, but we don't want to get trapped in that default view. So we're very open to testing. And when we look at people to test on, we are looking at someone who might be either A, have a proven track record.
Yeah.
So they can really point to why their production and their content that they create is really worth that fee and would be to our advantage. And then the other thing is possibly we just really, really love that influencer and we love their messaging and we want to support them in the best way that they will feel supported. And so in that case, we would be very open to working outside of our gifting program. And so that'd be another way that we'd look at it. So for example, this is just completely hypothetical, but let's say there was a celebrity oriented influencer in a very specific niche that we normally don't reach, but she or he wanted to have a fee associated with it. Well, we might want to test that because we might learn a lot from it. And then we might be able to attract more gifting oriented influencers based on our work with them. So again, what I think this is entailing is, look, influencer marketing is a long game. If you're in the short game for influencer marketing, you're going to have a hard road ahead of you.
I love that you said that. To me, it's like, it's people SEO. You know, SEO is a really long game. You're not going to get to page one overnight. If it was that easy, everybody would be on page number one and then you'd be still on page number 10. Like, I definitely believe that to be true. All right. So this one, you guys are going to like this. This one says language warning. Have you ever had to deal with anyone around accounts like FYPM, excuse my language, stands for fuck you, pay me, who focus on calling out brands who don't pay influencers? That has always scared me when doing seeding programs.
I'll watch my language and responding. It's just not part of our program, you know, so we don't really have to deal with that. We're not reaching out to people that are very obviously working with paid accounts. You know, Grin tells us too, who they've worked with in the past, and you can kind of correlate or associate, oh, that means they're working with paid placements.
Yeah.
So we try to avoid that. So we don't have a lot of that feedback to my knowledge. Anisha might have a little bit more to add there, but I do understand the influencer's frustration.
Yeah. Look,
some people are trying to build a business. Mm-hmm. And this is their business and this is their brand. So I think they could be a little more tactful on how they get back with them. But I would say it's important to clearly know what kind of influencers you're working with day one. So that doesn't become an issue, or it's a very small one.
I would add to that, if that's their attitude, then we don't want them with associated with the brand anyway. That's more, you know, because some things, it sounds cliche, but sometimes it's not all about money. And if that's what you're after, and I don't even, it's like you coming to, you want to work for me and you want a six-figure salary, and I don't know what you can do. It's your resume. And in social media, that resume is your analytics. Do you want to show me a snapshot or of what you've done for other brands? But I don't know that. You know, like Elton said, like we're open to paying a fee, but let's see what you can do first. You know, I'm not saying make us a dedicated post and all that. You can talk about dinner at the nice guy and just have on a LA Apparel, you know, rib dress. Yeah. You know, let's just see what it does organically within your content. And then we can go from there. But yeah, if that's their attitude, like I don't do mean, I don't do nasty. And sometimes like if they say, oh, well, I want 1,000 to post, sometimes I don't even reply because I don't even want that energy. So you have those girls who have that attitude as if they're the Beyonce of influencers. And there's 50 Beyonce of influencers, you know, like literally there's so many girls who have good numbers across all races and sizes. And so if that's your attitude, then no thanks. Moving on. And Grant makes it easy to move on because there's so many other people you can outreach.
Yeah. Well, it speaks to what you said during the fireside chat. To everyone that says no, there are 10 right behind her that are going to say yes.
Yeah.
It's so true. It's so true. And I think ultimately, if that is to your point, if that's how they represent themselves online, that's not who you want to speak on behalf of your brand. Exactly. These people are your storytellers, right? Exactly. They're the ones that are going to tell you like, this feels good. This, you know, this is my lifestyle. Like this is, you know, they're going to tell your brand story. So if they represent themselves like that online, I would be scared as well too.
Yeah.
I can appreciate that. So with gifting, are you asking for any content rights or does that come later?
That comes when they get the expectations email that goes through them. So they're making the selections and then they have to sign like the content rights. I don't remember verbatim what's in there. Elton, do you remember what's in there? The content rights?
We do require it.
Do you guys use the content rights that are kind of just built into Grin where they can check them off? Okay. Excellent. So, you know, for the listeners, we within Grin in the campaign and activation process, we have built-in content rights, or you can upload your own content rights specific to your brand, but it makes it really easy for that creator influencer to check things off for those content rights. I'd love to hear how you guys articulate this difference. What's the difference between a creator and an influencer?
In my opinion, I say it's almost synonymous. Influencer, the term influencer kind of has like a stigma to it now. And so now they just want to be creators. I'm a creator. But they're essentially to me, they're the same thing. I say influencers. If you say creator, okay, cool, let's do it. But they're the same thing. I just think it's creator is the cooler word now.
It's the it word.
I would add to that a little bit of nuance. What I would say is Anisha's completely right. I mean, these are really open terms and jargon that, you know, how gets loaded at times and has preferential treatment. You know, sometimes it's bad to be looked upon as an influencer, and then creator might sound sexier or has more authority or respect. But I do think there is a little bit of nuance to it. So what I would say is it really depends on the context of your business and your program. There are some programs that do need to have more content. And they need to utilize and leverage that content in other mediums, whether it be blogs, whether it be articles, whether it be regramming it or reposting it or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so those brands might really want to work with creators who make very, very quality, take a lot of time, put a lot of production and thought, maybe take some direction or some inspiration from the brand.
Yeah.
And they really deliver that. And that's what they're looking to be delivered on. Here's my piece of content. Now you go and you do whatever you want with it. You know, you put this super juice behind it. The influencers, if your program's like that and you're going to work with influencers, then you're like, no, your influencer is supposed to bring the juice. Your influencer is supposed to bring the heat, right? I don't care so much about the content, because you're going to use it in your channel. You're going to use it in your sphere of influence to then reach your audience. So I'm looking at, you know, how are you influential? You know, is it in creating the dialogue? Is it reaching the audience? And so on and so forth. So I do think there's still some nuance there. And I think those terms can be helpful. But like anything, they get overused, overplayed,
yeah,
and super loaded.
Well, this is my industry and it is all the time. And I toggle back and forth between creators and influencers. And the way that I wrap my head around it is all influencers are creators, but not all creators are not influencers, right? So you can have someone that can absolutely produce something spectacular. But to your point, Elton, they don't have an influence upon a community per se. They just make really great content. Okay, let's see. Next one. How do you ensure that the influencer you are gifting the products to posts content? Since there is no payment, do you still set a precise deliverable expected or simply hope for the best? And I think we kind of covered this in the fireside chat, but let me know if you have anything else to add to that.
I'll just add that I think it's just the expectation. Like, they know that I don't want you to post this in 4 weeks. Like, I want it within a good time frame. And then I'll get those girls who they know the game and they know that, oh, shoot, I haven't posted this in a week. Let me email her. And they'll tell me, I just moved. I wasn't feeling well, but I'm going to post in 4 days. That's literally emails I get. And I'm respectful of that. Thank you so much. And then in my emails templates, I say, when I give them the affiliate link, I say, can't wait to see your content. As if like I'm waiting on it. So I think there's that. And then if girls have questions, when they want to know more about the expectations, I'll say in exchange for 3 items, we'd love a tag and or mention in an upcoming TikTok post, in an upcoming Instagram post. Like, I'm saying upcoming, like right away, yeah. Like, not right, you know, because I know that these girls, yeah, that do this for a living, they schedule it. They schedule a day where they shoot. So if they shoot on Tuesdays, they don't get my product till Wednesday, they're not going to shoot again, you know, until their shoot day Tuesday. So I'm respective of that. But in my language, I'm like, can't wait to see it. Upcoming post, so that they know there is a sense of urgency. I don't want you to post this in, you know, 4 weeks.
Yeah, it totally reminds me of like a sales email when you're trying to get someone to book like a meeting with you and you're like, all right, is Thursday or Friday better for you? Right? Like, yeah, it's already, you know, you're kind of putting it in their head that they're saying yes already without them having to verbally say it. How does Los Angeles Apparel give direction to their influencers about the kind of content that they're looking for while also allowing them creative freedom? Creators usually need to know kind of touch points of what you want them to mention or say. How much detail do you provide for them?
We put that in the link when they go to make their selects. It
says, live URL.
Yeah, the live URL. It has like what we want them to include. So we say for YouTube, we want the hashtag LA Apparel in the caption because that's how Grin captures that content. If they just verbally say LA Los Angeles Apparel in the video, Grin's not going to capture it. So I have to be specific to that when giving direction. For Instagram, we learned that stories disappear. So stories don't do well for us as far as analytical content. So for Instagram, say in a post, tag, you can do tag in picture or tag in the caption. And then for TikTok, you know, we also give hashtags. They want to do hashtags, but we don't make that mandatory because for some, it can come off. For some girls who are already established influencers or creators, they don't hashtag crazy. But for those girls who are still trying to up their followers, they hashtag crazy. So I leave that open for whatever comes across as more organic to your audience, you do it. And then also too, it helps that like if we give crazy direction, then everyone's post is going to look the same. You know, they're putting the same 5 hashtags, saying the same 5 things. And then it's like, this is cookie cutter. And that's not what we want. So like we were saying in the chat, I trust their content. So I give them very few directives just as far as tagging us so that we can get that content. And anything else, go for it.
It would be really good to contrast that to something we've done in the past. So we've worked with creative agencies who work with influencers, and they're very directive heavy. Right? Because they see it as like their agency is like on the hook for these influencers creating good content and having a really solid campaign narrative and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And when we got that content back, to Anisha's point, we had 15 influencers. All 15 influencers, their posts look identical. There was like very, it just looked like a different person. But that was it.
Yeah.
It was almost all identical. to be honest with you, it was boring.
Yeah.
It was really, really boring. And so, you know, our program, we find it best from the creative aspect, almost give no directive. Mechanically, yes, you got to have a link. You got to have the product in it. It's got to be a post here. Or it's got to be this video here, or it's got to have this description here. But from a pure creative standpoint, it's very open. Most of our influencers wear the product. Some style it, some unbox it or unbag it. Some pack it into a bag that they're going on a trip with. I mean, it runs the gamut. Because we don't give that creative directive, it really allows them to do it how they need to do it.
And their audience receives it, you know, how they are used to receiving it. And I also think that speaks to relationship. Relationship with these girls is everything. So I'll get some girls ask me, hey, even after they submitted the expectations email, they'll ask me, hey, is there anything I need to do or say? Or is there any? And I'm like, no. And I think that goes a long way because it's like, I trust you. Like, nope.
Yeah.
You go for it. And that's trust, you know? Oh, shoot. I can, you know, she's not telling me to do a half twist turn here. And then.
But it's so true. It's so true. Now, do you guys upload maybe inspiration images at all? Because I know that there are some brands that like to do that for like, hey, this has worked in the past, or like truly just nothing like that at all.
It's as I trust their content. Like I spend enough time in Grin where if I do a filter and I might get back 2,000 influencers, I'm just clicking on random ones on random pages and I'm looking at their content. I could see me giving directive and inspiration if I wasn't doing that part of it. But I go through I click on each of their names and I look at their last 8 posts. And I'm like, she's it. She's not it.
I was going to say, Anisha, what you're saying is they are our inspiration.
Yeah. Right?
We don't need to give inspiration because they are our inspiration.
And they reach different audiences. They have different metrics, different numbers. So I trust. Like, that's like, you know, me hiring somebody and then I'm like over their desk making sure, did you
micromanaging?
Do this? Yeah. You don't, giving directive is micromanaging. And it takes the fun out of it. It takes the creative part out of these creators because they're like, shoot, okay, did I do that? Check that off. Did I spin? Yep, check that off. Did I do this? So it's just like, don't micromanage them. Go through the platform, look at their content and trust that you like what they put out there already. Just make sure they're doing the proper tags. That's it.
Yeah. I think that you spend your time so wisely on finding the right influencer. And the right influencer isn't necessarily the one that's going to convert to millions of dollars, but it is the one that's going to save you time on all of the areas that we continue to talk about, right? Like, you don't have to give direction because you took the time to find the right influencer because, again, inspirational, aspirational posts, you're like, yep, that's the look that I'm going for. Where I think that a lot of brands are so like metric focused on like the number that they need to get in order to even start the process when it's more labor intensive throughout if you don't take the time at the front end to be like, exactly. No, this is the right person. This is the right relationship because I'm not chasing someone down for content. And I'm happy with the content that I'm getting. So you guys definitely have this structured in a way that it saves you time throughout the entire campaign process without even like knowing it, you know?
It's so important how you begin things.
Yeah.
You know, often I'm sure there's some Zen Cohen somewhere here that, you know, I'll butcher, but really how you begin is how you're going to end. Right. And so if you're focused on the end result, and that's where you start, that's really going to hurt you. Again, our strategic account managers with Grin were fantastic for us and really putting a lot of forethought, really a lot of strategy behind our program, and then building all the tools to really onboard and prospect with. So it's like you said it really well, Katya. I mean, you got all the effort you put in the beginning is going to make the end so much easier. If you don't put that work in the front end, you're going to be chasing your tail at the back end. Here's a perfect example we talked about on our previous conversation is, you know, if you're attracting influencers who are kind of loose and you're just kind of spraying and praying, then you're going to spend a lot of time on the back end seeing if they've posted and why they haven't posted and communicating to them. And, you know, you spend about all your time there where you can't really do what you're supposed to be doing, which is attracting new influencers into your program. That's where your effort should be.
I will say what's really great about both of you is this is going to sound really strange, but you're both bought into it and you both have like the bigger vision. What advice would you give to someone that is like a superstar like Anisha, but may not have that support from like the exec level, the VP level, the manager level of like, hey, show me that this is working. Show me that, you know, the time that you're investing is worth it. What kind of advice do you give for someone who is kind of up against that and maybe doesn't have the more support from the top?
If that's the case, then it's already a struggle.
Yeah.
You know, because that person, you know, who you're reporting to doesn't already see the value in it. Like, I'm grateful that Elton sees the value.
Yeah.
In it, and we talk about it and, you know, he's just as invested and he takes that to back to the team in-house at LA Apparel. So I think if that's the case, I don't want to say this, but like, forget it. If you don't have the support.
It's how you begin things, right? It's back to the beginning. It's like, if you can't begin, you're going to have misalignment day one.
Yeah.
It's going to be an uphill battle all the way. So
yeah, no matter what you do, even if it is an amazing success, that person just is so oblivious. Like, I don't think this is it. So if you're up against that brick wall, I would just suggest doing something different.
Or I'd circle back and say that internally you need to get buy-in before you begin. And so what I would say is it's an educational process. I do pilots. And so if there was a way to do a pilot and have real clear expectations up front on what you're going to achieve, I think that would be better. I think a lot of people, and this is conjecture, but I think being in the space for so long and having a lot of retailers that I have purview into, I think a lot of people go into influencer marketing or this space really just like dipping their toe in and just saying, we're going to figure it out as we kind of move along. And I think that's not a great approach. I think you should really think about what you're trying to achieve first. You can still dip your toe in, and you're definitely going to have to learn as you go. That's going to be a constant learning process, but you should really take the time to really define what your program is and what you're hoping to accomplish.
I like that. That was not part of the question, so I veered off track. I apologize. How do you track the influencer engagement to know if your gifted collab worked?
Grin makes it easy. It's all in there. I mean, that's what's great. I mean, if you want to talk about the specific numbers, you could see pieces of content. You can go down to the content. They're easily linked. You can go into the platforms themselves. You can go straight into TikTok or YouTube or Instagram. But from us, maybe to answer it specifically, because we're looking at more reach and awareness, views, very important to us. But a view in Instagram is different than a view in TikTok. So views are very important. Likes, same thing. Comments. Comments are really great. We've seen some of our best pieces have hundreds of comments, which we know that is something that's really resonating and building upon our conversation. And that's someone who has influence, right?
Yeah.
Rather than just a view. And then, you know, smaller metrics are stuff like shares. But all the engagement metrics are a little bit different. And you kind of have to put them in the frame of YouTube versus TikTok. Or hopefully eventually Pinterest versus Instagram.
Absolutely. You mentioned that it hasn't been worth it to pay macro influencers. How do you measure ROI? We are often disappointed in sales from paid influencer partnerships, but we tend to look at it as an awareness play. What would a successful macro influencer partnership look like for you guys?
That's why I don't believe in paying them, because their ROI is never what you expect. And if you want awareness, you can get awareness. What you pay one macro girl, you can get for free with 20 micro girls. And the micro girls, their engagement is off the charts compared to one macro person. I get why people do it. I get it for the look of it, but I've never knew of a brand that's been happy with the return after paying so much money. If you pay a Kim Kardashian, it's totally different. I personally have never seen the success or heard of it. So I just wouldn't do it. But Elton, go ahead.
Well, I think it's worthwhile because it definitely does work in certain contexts. But what I would say is, like, the important thing with macro in mind is you really have to make sure that you're the right company and the right stage of your company to be working with macro influencers, right? And you have a relationship with those macro influencers that they're not going to just like, oh, I sell a bracelet and it's like this macro influencer is wearing the bracelet as she's going to the grocery store.
Yeah.
And you hope it's like, oh, yeah, I got a press hit. Like, it's not going to be, you're not going to see the ROI from that. And you probably won't even see a good awareness from it, because all the views are just people that are completely outside of your audience or is very non-committal. And so the synergy with that macro influencer, when you do work with them, and when we will work with them, hopefully soon more, I would say is like, just make sure that they really align to who you are, right? You're not just buying that audience. You know, you're not just getting into that, because it's not going to resonate. And I think that's why it fails for a lot of people. I would also say, like, it's very hard to drive revenue or drive ROI unless there's a very, very compelling reason to act with that macro influencer right away. And that usually involves discounting, right? Codes, the macro influencer not being organic and having to really pitch it. And then it's like, well, how is that really being in the sphere of influence? Or really, is that like a television ad?
Yeah.
Right? And so that's why I think, like, some of the macro influencer work has been kind of misplaced. Like, I'd rather take that ad budget and frankly go to over the top television and run my own ad, because it probably be much more impactful from an ROI level than it is working with a macro influencer, sadly.
I've also seen a lot of brands actually kind of take that approach to using commercials. So it's interesting that you've said that. I don't know if you guys have seen it. Like, I'm starting to see, like, the creators' posts as the commercial as well, like the series of TikToks that are seen, and they're now repurposing that. And as someone who is the director of content, who knows what it takes to put together a commercial for something, like, that saves you a ton of money if you just get a bunch of micro influencers that can help you with that as well too. Now, you mentioned the power of TikTok for reach and follower acquisition KPIs, but have you tried or seen significant results on TikTok with sales-oriented goals, having influencers posting in their feed only with link in bio, as it doesn't allow, unlike Instagram, to include clickable items?
Well, I'll start and then I'll lean on Anisha. TikTok's still a little bit of the Wild West. I mean, literally, they are changing their platform and how it works on a two-week cycle. And I know, because we're involved with TikTok and we have an account management team at TikTok. So what I would say is, like, hold on, because you're going for a ride when you're on TikTok. With that said, I would say that TikTok is very addictive and people do not want to leave that platform.
Yeah.
So it's going to be very hard to measure off of the platform stuff like revenue and traffic. Just isn't going to happen. It's going to be very, very difficult. So keep that in mind when you work on TikTok. So I guess to answer that question is, we haven't really seen that working with TikTokers, but I would also say it's early days for us.
Yeah.
Anisha has only really been working with TikTok, I would say, in around the 3 month mark in baby steps. And we're getting much more driven towards TikTok. And the one thing I would say about TikTok, and then I'll hand the mic to Anisha, is it's a very organic place. You look at how it started off with music and Lil Nas X, you know, and others. It really treats its organic creators in a much stronger way than Instagram or Facebook or others. And so in that way, it's a lot like YouTube. And so what I would say is, it's definitely a great space to be working with influencers in. You're probably going to get a lot of results the more that you work and refine your approach in TikTok.
I like that. Anisha, do you have anything else to add?
Nope. Elton's hit it all.
Perfect. Well, Elton, this question is specifically for you. It says, for Elton, you say you always give tracking links to influencers that they can use in their content. In your experience, do influencers often incorporate them in their content? And when they do they only use it on Instagram stories?
Oh, okay. Well, I'll punt a little bit to Anisha when it comes to actual, like, stories and stuff like that. We don't work with stories much because they're so temporary. But yeah, we always involve the affiliate links, and they're mostly just for tracking purposes. Honestly, they don't use it a lot of times. And I think that that's an area that we can improve upon, because it's beneficial for us, but it's also beneficial for them. Like, we'd love to be able to give them that feedback, you know, or if they wanted to work with us even more, which we typically don't form long relationships, but if they had the performance metrics there, we would.
Yeah.
We would probably want to. So it's definitely an area that we need to improve upon, but I'll kind of punt over to Anisha to add to it.
Yeah, I think it's just our way of improving on that can be maybe the verbiage used, because I send them, once I get their proposal and I accept it and they get the order out, I send them that email like, hi, here's your affiliate link to share with your followers. And these girls may be green and not really know the benefit of it, you know? So maybe in the verbiage, I can explain the benefit of using it for them and for us. I think that'll help a lot. Those YouTube girls, they understand it. The YouTube and our bucket three, which is our macro Instagram girls, they get it. They know about the links and they know it helps them and helps us. And then, of course, YouTube, it helps them with commission. But I just think those green girls, they just, you know, they don't get it. They don't get the significance of it. So I think me explaining it in one or two sentences, I think will help with them. Oh, okay, let me... Like, they're not like, click this link. No, it's just like, you can just put it and say, hey, if you want to purchase what I got on, here's the link, you know, so that it comes off as organic as possible.
One more thing we're testing, Katya, which maybe is relevant, is we're testing vanity codes. You know, we don't ever do discounts as a brand. That's our brand strength and our brand positioning. So we're not going to do discounts, but we will offer at times like a small token GWP. Like gift with purchase. And so one thing that we are testing, and it's very early days, so we don't have a lot of results to share, but you know, we'll take the influencer's handle, we'll make it into a code, and we'll allow them to share it to their audience. I think that really gets the influencer excited, not because he or she feels like, oh, I'm giving my follower count or my readership, I'm giving them something more. Like valuable, and it's their own handle as the code, which is pretty cool. Like, you don't see that a lot of times. So we're testing that. And I think those partnerships, those influencers are much more apt to also then use the affiliate links.
I will say, to add to that, I don't want to, when we're using affiliate links and the influencer's not using them, I don't want to put like all of the onus on them, because it's also to the followers. Like, we'll see like an affiliate link and they'll say the person posted it and there's only 4 clicks. That just goes to their followers. Like, maybe followers on Instagram and all and these platforms just don't click on it. They love the content. Yeah. They love it. They view it. They comment. It looks so good. But they just don't click. And it could be that's just not an engaging thing for followers.
I'm sorry to spend so much time on this question, but it's a really good question. It's a really good question, which I would just say, like, if I had to take my pick, and hopefully I just want both of these, but if I had to take my pick, do I want to comment or do I want to click? I would probably want the comment.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I would want the comment.
Yeah, because it's, again, it's our goal. Our goal is to be, to get awareness and reach.
Yeah.
Not necessarily to like get real heavy handed on a tactical conversion, right? Trying to get them to the site, trying to get them to buy now. We're not, again, this is a longer play for us. It's about carrying the conversation. It's not about necessarily beginning, middle, and end of conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And well, and you know what? And comments are sticky. It takes time. It takes effort to put in a comment, to click, to like that kind of stuff can be very transactional. I like everything. Sometimes I'll go back and I'm like, wait a second, I don't want to like that. I don't want to feed the algorithm. I don't want them to think that this is the stuff that I want to see as well too. Because yeah. I mean, like, I think that as consumers of social media, we know what we do feeds into the algorithm. And so we'll quickly kind of course correct. Can you elaborate on EMV? So earned media value. Is that an important KPI your brand focuses on?
Well, we can make this one sweet and short. No.
Okay. You don't focus on EMV.
I think that's a legacy metric really that was built by the press. You know, when you really look at like the press industry and PR, it was a metric to kind of satisfy that appetite to really look at what the earned media would cost you if you go out in the open marketplace. But for us, the answer is no.
That's short and sweet. I love it. How many influencers do you activate on average a month?
Well, we just said, before we were just aggressive. Now we go after 40 TikTokers.
Okay.
We try to onboard 40 TikTokers, brand new TikTokers every month. We try to onboard 20 Instagram users a month, influencers a month. And then we try to onboard 20 YouTube influencers a month. So total is 80. So 80 is our goal to hit per month.
And then we work with our in-house and our macro that are outside of those numbers. But what I would say is it's still very early days for us. We have a lot to learn. And we don't have all the answers. It might come across that we have a lot of answers. We don't have a lot of the answers. We're learning just as much as probably a lot of people listening to this.
Especially with TikTok. Yeah, we're still trying to find that sweet spot with what works for TikTok, because we'll go, the girl would have 1 million followers, and then one video would have 80,000 likes. One video would have 100,000 likes. And then the last three videos would have 3,000, then 79 likes. And then 40 likes. I'm like, wait, what is going on? So just trying to find how TikTok works. Because you would think that major drop-off means that that girl doesn't have the engagement that she should. But then my filter has it set at 15%, 20% engagement. So is that engagement off just that one post from a month ago? So we're trying to find that sweet spot in what works. Like Elton said, we really don't have it all figured out. But I think we're trying so many different combinations.
We're always testing. A couple of things to add to that is real quickly is, one is, as soon as we figure it out, the platforms will change. So again, you'll never figure it out. The other is, it's still very early days, but what I envision this is, once we can scale this, and thanks to Grin, which makes scaling so effortless and efficient, is we will scale this. And my hope is to have hundreds a month and scale up from there. So this is still very early days for us. We've only been on the Grin platform since, Katya, you probably could tell us better, but I believe it's way less than a year. I am a firm believer in you take baby steps with clear eyes and a strong gut, strong appetite, and you move forward. And every baby step we've made, we've learned things, and we're scaling up from there and there. Same approach when hopefully Pinterest comes aboard. Maybe get like work with 5, maybe work with 10 influencers, scale up from there for 20, 30, 50, 100. So that's kind of our approach.
I like that. We have a couple more questions because you guys have done such a great job at elaborating on some of the questions, and there were some repeats in here. But this one's a great question here. How are you able to repurpose content and ads without paying? Or what is your primary method of repurposing content?
We do very little of it, but we have full rights. Again, as we explained on the Grin platform, it allows you to have full rights. We've kind of tried to fit some of the advertisements into a frame that works for that medium. So like if it's a great carousel in Instagram, maybe it's a dynamic edited video in TikTok. Or if it's a great TikTok video, then it's uploading that into Snapchat ads.
Nice.
Right? That's been very helpful for us. And then making sure that our logo is on it. But we don't do a ton of it. And we really feel like, again, it comes back to our goals of a program, is we want to have reach an audience in a vernacular and using dialogue that belongs in that influencer realm. Us as a brand, we feel like we speak very well directly to consumers through ad platforms. And we don't really want to mix so much the two of them. And again, maybe for your listeners are familiar with our brand, because we're a basics clothing company that can be worn by many different types of people, we're a very far-reaching, broad, and diverse brand. So our ads themselves, I think for some brands, would look like influencer ads.
Yeah.
But just given the diversity of the format, the models, the looks, the backgrounds, the context, very, very diverse. And so we've tested influencer material in ads, and they've tested usually, you know, it's around the gamut, but pretty much the same, sometimes less than. And so we're still experimenting with it. So hopefully I answered that question.
Yeah, I definitely think that you did. Just the final question that I like to end with is a question from us. How do you measure the value of working with creators?
I'll say that I think our magic in this is that I value something different than what Elton values. And it just makes it like a full picture, if that makes sense. So like I look at the promotion rate. Elton has me paying attention to the analytical part of it. So the promotion rate, I look at that. And then the content they're creating. Like if they're creating just like good content that I know is so on brand yet organic to these girls, that to me is a success. And that in turn, Elton will email me or he'll say in our weekly chats that this girl is good. This is good. Our numbers are up. And is I think if because I'm focusing on she make good content because I know like that's the meat of it. I'm a vegetarian, but like that's the meat of it. That's like the meat of it. If they make good content, then it can just, it's like a, you know, a snowball effect. And I know the numbers will support that, you know, because I will say I'm not a heavy analytical person. And I know that that's my strength. But if I focus on what I know my strength is and understanding influencers from the very beginning, it's worked perfect. And Elton will tell me. And sometimes Elton will say, you know, our promotion rate is down, but, you know, that could be because we took a break over the holidays. Okay, let's ramp it up this way, this way, this way. And then we're back on course. So that's how I look at, that's how I measure success. That's how I said, that's why I said earlier, it's probably like, it sounds so vain because I'm just looking at the visual part of it, but that's how I measure it. And I think it just works from my end.
To piggyback on that, what I would say is the way that we measure value is really looking at the penetration within each of these platforms and within each of these audiences. So to Anisha's point, we're using measurements like pieces of content created, right? We're looking at engagement metrics like views, very soft, but views or comments or shares. But we also measure it and just like, what's the opportunity cost of working within this platform? And so what Grin has allowed us to do is really minimize the opportunity cost. You know, the platform is very efficient, which then makes us effective and makes us consistent. Right? We're not having to reinvent every time we do outreach. We don't have to reinvent our campaign structures. We don't have to reinvent, you know, different ways that we engage and promote each campaign. So for us, it's really a long game. You know, that's what we talked about previously, but, you know, it's being able to participate in all of these platforms using Grin as the platform.
Yeah.
In a really consistent, long-term approach. Take your averages, use the Grin dashboard, which is great, and look at how you're building those long-term metrics. One metric we didn't talk about, but Grin allows you to look at your follower count and the growth. And we've seen a sizable follower count growth when we started using Grin. So that's just another, that's not a main goal of ours, but that's just, that's the way you can kind of start to measure the value and look at it long-term.
I love it. I love it. Well, thank you guys so much. You have let us peek behind the curtains into the Los Angeles apparel creator, influencer program, whatever we want to be able to call them. Thank you so much for, you know, spending time with us in our live portion of Brands Talking Influencers. If you guys are listening and haven't watched it, go watch it just to begin with. And yeah, thank you guys again so much.
Thank you.
It's our pleasure.
Thank you.
Wow, that was so much great information. The insights that Elton and Anisha both brought to the table were insane. My final thought, kind of after the fireside chat and also recording those questions with them, was the value of taking the time to find the right influencer. And that's just it. It takes time. Elton said it best when he talked about going into influencer marketing with those right expectations. If you want to see true results, it takes testing, timing, data, and strategy. Want to hear more? Be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast to get the latest episodes. And be sure to give us a rating and leave a review. Those help. I read them. If you're interested in watching the Fireside Chat with Anisha and Elton on scaling a product gifting program with creators or other brands that we've featured in the past, like Able, Vera Bradley, Trifecta, Nutribolt, that's just to name a few, visit our events section at grin.co. Check out our resources and blogs while you're there for more tips, tricks, and marketing trends. And until next time, keep grinning.